Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your host tonight, Hugh, and me, Alan. Orange Ribbon is Joy's GLBGIQ multicultural program. For the purposes of definition, Orange Ribbon not only includes multiple ethnicities as topics, but we also treat various religions as being another culture. So on tonight's program, we'll be taking a look at the Jewish religion, its cultures and traditions, conflicts and contradictions, and how it treats its GLBIT community members here in Australia. So that's what's coming up on Orange Ribbon tonight. Stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Orange Ribbon, and you're with Hugh and Alan. Me, Alan, tonight. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good. And tonight, as I said in the introduction, we're taking a slightly different tack on culture, if you like, as we have in the past covered various religions as well. And tonight we're visiting the Jewish religion, and we've joined by Colin and Michael. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
And Michael's had a bit of a rush getting here.
Look, it was an interesting journey getting here tonight. It really was.
Slight motor vehicle problems, but anyway, you're here, so I can stop panicking now, can't I? Now, in this first section, we're going to talk about being Jewish and gay and or lesbian and or transgendered, but if we go back a step or two, a lot of people perhaps don't understand the history of Israel. I mean, a lot of people probably know that the state was established after the Second World War, but that's probably about all that most people would know. Can somebody give us a sort of a thumbnail sketch of what is the history of Israel?
Look, Alan, I'd be hard-pressed to give you a really thorough and, you know, any type of decent history of the state of Israel. It's not really my forte.
Let me throw one thing at you. Bridget Boson, who is running Campervan before this program, happened to mention to me that she thought that it originally started sometime after the First World War and there were some hiccups or something or other, and I thought that's news to me.
Well, let's go back to May 17, 1948. I think that's the date of the formation of the State of Israel, and it's came from the United Nations. Look, I can't really authoritatively talk about much to do with the State of Israel. It's not really my forte.
What happened beforehand? So if we go back 2,000 years ago, what happened to Jewish civilization? Is the Israelites from 2,000 years ago, what actually happened?
There weren't any Israelites because there was no Israel.
Well, there was no Israel.
But it was a fairly nomadic existence because they were all over Europe in different countries, and primarily Europe, because it was only when they left, mainly during the war, to go to America, Canada, Australia, etc., and South Africa. Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, that's fairly recent, though. That's since the Second World War.
That's correct.
But going back 2,000 years, I mean, one part of the story of the Jewish people is the exodus from Egypt, you know, where Passover comes from, the Jewish festival of Passover or Pesach. And, you know, the Jews escaped from Egypt, you know, in the biblical times. And that's part of, you know, the story of the Jewish people, you know, and traveled through the desert and, went to the land of Canaan, and there's the story goes on from there. I'm not a biblical student either, so unfortunately I can't really give you too much on that.
Yeah. Do you both practice your religion?
Do we practice it? We both do, and I'm speaking for Michael because I know what he does every Friday night.
Right.
And I do the same with my parents, and that is have a Sabbath dinner with them, and we celebrate high holidays. We don't go to synagogue very regularly. I think Michael might even go more than I do. But in terms of practicing, it really depends on sort of what level you're talking about. Michael and I are both not kosher at home.
Right.
I believe you're not. Am I right? I don't want to get myself into trouble
here. Now, for the uninitiated, when you say you're not kosher at home, what does that mean?
Well, we're talking about food when I talk about kosher and keeping milk and meat separate. And the meat.
Oh, you mean at your homes? You
yes.
Mean?
Yes.
Oh, sorry,
yes.
Sorry. I thought you meant
so
at
you'll just go to the
home. Sorry. Yeah.
There's certain Jewish dietary laws that if you're observant, you know, from a more Orthodox background, you would keep certain dietary laws. There are certain prohibitions on types of food you can and can't mix, and the ways that you must prepare food, and the way that some food must be, you know, slaughtered and stuff like that. So there's a whole regime of observances, and depending on, you know, how much or how important that is to you or not, you might be more inclined to follow that or not. And
that can be in different levels too. I mean, you can have you can basically just not have any ham products in your house and say that you're sort of, well, you're not really keeping kosher, but you're not allowing ham. And then you can go to other extremes where, for instance, my cousin for Sabbath would not even buy the bread from the kosher bread shop because it wasn't kosher enough. So she would make her own bread for the Sabbath. So that's really going to the extreme. As I say, there are different levels. My brother has two dishwashers in the kitchen, one for milk dishes, one for meat dishes, two ovens, two sinks, etc.
The explanation behind that is that if you're practicing and keeping a kosher kitchen, you aren't supposed to mix dairy products with meat products, and so you would have a separate set of everything for anything that you want to eat meat from and a separate set of everything that you want to put a dairy product on, and that goes back to some prohibition that says you shouldn't boil. That's been interpreted to mean you shouldn't then go and mix meat and dairy products.
In the Jewish religion, you have different levels, don't you?
Yes.
Can you just go through the different levels that we have?
Are we talking about sects?
Is that what you're
talking about? Levels of religious observance?
Yeah. Yes.
Look, it's a very, very, very complex area. And you can go from the ultra extreme Orthodox perspective, which is quite fundamentalist in its outlook, and people who practice that level of religious observance think that's their correct and only way to be Jewish.
Mm. And if anyone out there has walked around Rip and Lee or East St Kilda on the weekend, those areas would notice a lot of people dressed up in black.
Yes, and with the white things hanging
the tassels,
down. The tassels.
Yeah,
what do they represent?
Look, that was a style of dress in the 18th or 19th century in Europe, and the people who had that particular religious observance carried that dress code through. It's no religious dress code. It's just a cultural dress code that denotes their sort of sect or you know.
Is the way they like to portray themselves in the religion?
Look, it's just a, you know, how we do it type thing.
What about the, you see all these people in the St Kilda area?
Mm. Eastern Kilda.
Eastern Kilda.
That's important.
Big difference.
Okay, I'll slap my wrist. Who wear pigtails and the top hats?
Okay, you're talking about the boys from the age of, help me, Michael, from what age do they have the pigtails?
Oh, I don't know when at what stage you would start having your side curls.
I think it's actually from when they're born.
They're not pigtails. They're just locks of hair.
It's locks of hair that
curls,
haven't been cut off.
Right.
And the sort of adas or the more fundamental or religious.
And they keep those even as an adult. They keep them, but they actually tuck them behind their ears so they don't hang down.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is homosexuality treated within the various levels of Jewish communities? Now, I get the impression that there's a sort of a very open part of the community that's reasonably accepting, and right through to the ultra-Orthodox conservatives. How do the attitudes change?
Look, that's a really interesting question, Alan, as they all are. The homosexuality is, strictly speaking, as the word of the Torah, the books, the religious books, is technically it's forbidden, or homosexual practice is forbidden. However, there are interpretations, and Judaism seems to be all about interpreting this word and how you want to put your own spin on it. The more religious or orthodox, or not religious, but the more orthodox interpretation is it's unacceptable at any cost. And the more progressive or liberal reform views on homosexuality are it's part of the natural human condition, and it should be you know, as anything else, it should be
accepted, I guess.
Accepted, yeah.
I seem to remember, Michael, a discussion that I had with you on Orange Ribbon some 8 or 9 years ago. I think it was you, if I remember rightly. It may have been somebody else, but I think it was you. It's told me that I think it's New York or somewhere in the US, there is a gay synagogue or a synagogue that accepts gays or something. Yeah.
There is. Well, look, at the time, in the conversation I had with you back all those years ago, Alan, I do recall it, is that there is a sort of, want of a better word, closet or underground community of Orthodox gay Jews in New York. And this was only hearsay. Heard it from two people, but I believe it's true. And they were so in the closet about their homosexuality that, you know, they went around in secret and they turned up to these meetings and only they knew who they were, and I don't know how you'd find out about this.
Okay, and finally, just for this break, we touched on homosexuality. What about transgenderism? Does it have any different view from the Jewish community to homosexuality?
Look, I don't know that there's a great deal in the Bible or the Torah about transgenderism. I mean, it could be looked at a medical condition and, you know, if there's problems, you would address the medical condition. I don't know. You'd need to speak to a rabbi as to any religious perspective on that. But I don't think there's any taboo issues about transgenderism as far as that's concerned.
Interestingly enough, though, in a movie that we recently showed at an Aleph social function, there were transgendered people in there within the synagogues caring for older people.
That was really interesting.
They were very accepted, yeah, but they weren't Jewish.
Well, look, they weren't really transgender. They were more like cross-dressers. They were Filipino people who lived in Israel dressed up as, like drag performers at night, but they were men during the day. Was that...
Yeah, the
so
men.
It was women dressing as men.
A bit of a mixture.
A bit of a mixture. Yeah,
it was women. They were carers during the day, and they were looking after Orthodox senior citizens.
This is Orange Ribbon. You're with Hugh and Alan tonight, and our guests speaking about the Jewish religion are Michael and Colin.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Orange Ribbon with Hugh and Alan, and that's a song from Yossi and Jagger, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But Hugh, you've got a giveaway.
I do. I've got the DVD of the week, Stephen K. Amos, Find the Funny. Stephen K. Amos Live, Find the Funny, showcases his uproarious 2009 international tour, where he proves that funny can be found in the most unexpected places. If you'd like this DVD of the week, you can call Nick and Marcus on reception on 9699-2949 right now.
Orange Ribbon, and we're talking about the Jewish following, Jewish religion here tonight, and that theme was from a Jewish movie, Michael.
Oh, yes, what a fantastic
Israeli movie,
film.
Yes.
A film by Eitan Fox. It came out about 6-7 years ago,
about
I think.
That.
The film was called Yossi and Jagger, and it's a love story between two soldiers in the Israeli Defense Force and the challenges that go with being not entirely out in a relationship in the Israeli Defense Force.
Mm. I actually have a copy of it and
have you?
Watched it a couple of times.
Yes, it's one of those movies you can watch a couple of times. Beautiful love story.
And the song was by Ivri Lider. He's an amazing singer.
Yeah, I've seen the DVD myself. It's
have
very,
you?
And I guess that's the lead-in to talk about a number of films that have come out, gay-themed and lesbian-themed films have come out of Israel.
Quite a few.
Yeah, run over some of them and what they've been about.
Look, Eitan Fox has been one of those fantastic filmmakers who has put together not only Yossi and Jagger, but there was Walk on Water, and then there was The Bubble.
The Bubble, which is very
The Bubble was one of his most recent films, and they've all got a very interesting storyline, usually about conflict of one variety or another.
Correct.
The first one was conflict between two soldiers. The second one was a conflict between a person who was in the Holocaust. He was of Nazi sort of background, and the grandson who came to find out about his background, and the Israeli Secret Service trying to track this person down. Mm-hmm. And the third one was a love story between an Israeli Jew and a Palestinian, and that was really interesting.
The other one that I missed at the Queer Film Festival earlier this year, and because it conflicted with something else I wanted to see, as I remember, as always seems to happen, was Antarctica. I think that was shown at the Queer Film Festival, wasn't it?
I'll have to let Michael speak, because I actually haven't seen it yet.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
I did see Antarctica, yes. Look, it's I have to remember now what it was about. It was a story about people living in Tel Aviv and the lives of different people. It was, recall the name of the film was to do with wanting to travel to Antarctica, but it was actually all based in Israel and sort of Tel Aviv.
We said these are films that have come out of Israel.
Correct.
Have they been shown in Israel?
Oh, look, I'm sure.
I would say so.
Israel's a very, very, you know, it's predominantly, it's a secular country, and there's a, you know, it's very rich in culture and arts, and there's been absolutely no problem in screenings. I mean, Tel Aviv is one of the great gay cities of the world. It's really up there. Mm. It's a fantastic, vibrant city if you're gay. You clubs and cafes and bars and the beach culture and beats and, you know, the works.
I was telling Colin, actually, earlier I did an interview with Tel Aviv Radio, a morning show, and they actually told me there at one time you had, I thought it was a radio station, a gay and lesbian radio station, but Colin didn't think so, maybe a gay and lesbian show. Would that be normal in Israel?
It would be accepted.
Look, Israel's, as I said, they're Israel's a very accepting country. It's not a religious country as such. I mean, there's a lot of religious people in Israel who have a lot of very extreme views on issues like homosexuality, but for the most part, you know, it's quite safe to be gay in Israel. And you can be out. Yeah, you know, the Israeli government recognizes same-sex marriages from other countries, so it's a pretty, you know...
Same-sex marriages from other countries?
Well, yes, because there's a slight complication that Israel only... it's only legal to have a religious marriage ceremony in Israel,
right,
which, of course, can't be between two people of the same sex. But the government, it's not, I don't know if it's a loophole or not, but they will recognise relationships, same-sex relationships from other countries.
Okay.
Pre-existing.
And why do you think, maybe it's my view only, a slightly disproportionate number of gay-themed films coming out of Israel?
Actually, I don't know that they all come out of Israel. There was Trembling Before God, which came out of America, Sandy Dabowski. That was quite an amazing film.
That film, Trembling Before God, just remind me, why when G blah D is printed, and I've noticed that in a number of documents.
Yes.
Why is that?
You're not supposed to take the word of the name of the Lord in vain, or to say it in vain, except when you're using it in prayer. So when you write it, you need to leave out the middle letter.
Look, it's a,
does that sound?
Well, the orthodox explanation of why firstly you're not allowed to, you know, as a religious Jew, you would not be allowed to say the name of God. You would similarly not be allowed to write it as such. You would have variations in which you could write it, but you wouldn't be writing the actual name. And in English, it's been turned around that you don't write the word God. You would write G-D. But the story of Trembling Before God is about Orthodox Jews and their experience. LGBT Orthodox Jews and their experiences. So it's an Orthodox context, and that's why the name of the film has an Orthodox appearance.
Sort of name.
It's not how all Jews would do things, it's just how Orthodox Jews would do it.
Okay, let's take a break. This is Orange Ribbon, you're with Alan and Hugh, and our guests tonight are Michael and Colin.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Orange Ruin with Hugh and Alan, and I think most people would probably recognise that piece of music.
Well, I certainly recognised it.
Did you?
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Havanagila.
That was with a twist, though. It was actually a slightly anglicised version of Havanagila.
Jazzed up version, I think,
It was pretty cool.
Now, being Jewish and gay and or lesbian and or transgendered and or queer and all the other...
Or bisexual.
Letters of the alphabet, yes. There are two support groups in Melbourne, one of which I always understood to be all male at one stage, that is being Aleph Melbourne, but I gather that that's all changed. Firstly, Aleph, go back a little bit. When did Aleph start, and what was its background, and what were its original objectives and membership requirements?
Initially, the group started in 1995. There were three people that felt there was a need for a support and social group for gay and bisexual Jewish men in Melbourne. There'd been a lesbian group running for 3 years prior to that, and due to the nature of that group, a separate men's group was necessitated. And that group, Aleph, in its initial formation, went through for about 10 or so, 12 years in as a men's only group. But then I started getting contact from people saying, I want to... it actually was interesting that a lot of the members tended to be older men or men who had been in married relationships and then had come out of that as, you know, gay men. And so a lot of the people were actually older. And the people who coming along wanted, younger people came along, wanted a separate group. Not that they didn't want to be with the older people, they wanted to be with people of their own age. And so with myself and another person, we formed a group called Young Aleph. And that was going to be a men and women GLBT social group for young people, and at the time that was forming, it made sense to include to change the nature of Aleph from a men's only group to become an all-inclusive, you know, everyone and anyone who identifies as Jewish, come along, whatever your sexuality is.
How did the original group take this, you breaking off?
The original group?
You know, the older men group, as you call it.
Look, the message was sent to all the members, you know, we'd like to get your feeling on how this would be, you know, if we, you know, started including women or people who were transgender or whatever, you know. And overwhelming response was, fine, that's great, let's do it. There were a few people who were a bit hesitant, but I think in the long run it's been a good thing. There's been no negative feedback from that.
And where is there an age split, or is it very grey in the middle as to where you trans
the
from
group,
one to the other?
The main group is open to anybody, age irrelevant. The young youth group is for people under 30.
So is there any difference in the objectives of the two groups, or the sole difference is just the age?
Look, I think ideally it's just a place where you can feel comfortable with people similar to you who have a similar experience, and there's no real, you know, let's strive for this in one direction here with this group and that in the other. You know, in Pride March, we come together as sort of, you know, two groups in the one, two banners, but in the one group, and it's one identity, really.
And how do you get publicity for the group within the Jewish community? I mean, is it possible for you to advertise in is a strange Jewish news?
Yes, in the Jewish Press, there was at one stage a community notice board section in the paper, which doesn't seem to be there anymore. There is a diary, a community diary, which has listings in there for people who, free listings for community organisations. Much like the Also directory. And
we also have a community service announcement on Joy.
Yes.
Which we, in fact, played a few minutes ago, actually.
Although that wasn't in the Jewish community as such.
No, that's correct. But
yeah. And other ways people can find Aleph or Young Aleph are on Facebook through connections. So through Jewish social connections, people can check other people's Facebook pages, possibly see that they're connected through there's an Aleph listing that they're friends of. The actual groups on Facebook are private for confidentiality reasons, but there's a public view or friend as well that they can connect through.
How many people are you looking at in this group?
It's not overly huge.
The membership has over 80 people.
Is it 80? With Young Aleph?
Well, the thing is that a lot of the people are too scared to identify publicly, and they don't come to events due to the nature of there being taboo issues with being homosexual, etc., in the Jewish community. But there are a number of people who do come out to our events.
Okay, so if somebody wants to follow up further, then what's the simple thing, though? Search for ALEPH.
Aleph.org.au?
Yeah. Aleph.org.au.
Yeah, contact at aleph.org.au or facebook.com/aleph, A-L-E-P-H. Simplest way to find us.
But if you just Google the word Aleph, that would
Melbourne.
Take you. Aleph Melbourne. Yeah.
Okay, you're listening to Orange Ribbon.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Orange Ribbon. With you and Alan, and our guests are Michael and Colin. And that was by, help me out here, Michael, Karen Pellis, was it?
Karen Pellis Mabul.
Mabul.
Which I think means flood.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay.
That's a beautiful voice she's got. Really stunning.
Yeah, it's very, very, very pleasant voice, actually. Now, moving on to some serious stuff. Back in 2006, there was a World Pride March in Jerusalem that went slightly awry because of a stabbing or something. What's the story behind
it? Oh, gosh. World Pride, or I think it's Interpride, I'm not quite sure the full name. World Pride decided that the 2006 World Pride event would be held in the holy city of Jerusalem.
Yeah, holy smoke. Holy Not smoke. A good choice.
Well, no, look, it was I thought it was a great choice.
Was it a reason for having it there? Or was it just somebody went, let's go to Jerusalem?
Probably they did.
There might have been a reason. I'm not sure of the exact details of that part of it. But Israel's a fairly open society for having gay people have pride marches. Tel Aviv does one every year. Mm. And they thought probably Jerusalem would be a good place to hold one.
Maybe. But it's one of the most religious places, isn't it?
It is.
In the country.
It
is a weird place to decide to go and have a.
I know.
I think it was just to open, as I understand the press at the time, it was just to present Israel as being a place that was accepting of gays, which normally it is with most. In most areas of the community. But something went wrong. There was a stabbing or something.
Oh, look, there was. There was a... now, was that actually in 2005 or 2006?
I believe the stabbing was in a previous year.
Yeah,
and the stabbing was by an ultra-Orthodox religious man who got into a tussle in the Pride March and tried to pull the flags down and the banners down and had a knife in his hand and managed to stab one of the gay marchers. Mm. And he was fine. He had a flesh wound, but he was fine. But they used that, I think, that when they were trying to put the march on the next year by saying, you know, they were always accusing this guy of...
Oh, look, the whole thing about having a gay event in Jerusalem, there was, you know, accusations that it will taint the city, it's filth, it's bringing depravity to Jerusalem, and it's the worst possible sin that you could possibly do on the holiest city in the world. Well, if you happen to subscribe to those beliefs, of course, which not everybody does, and some people just think, well, it's another cool place to have a cool Pride event.
I mean, it would have been a great backdrop, the city of Jerusalem, you know, for a Pride march. But my personal view is I'm with you. I wouldn't have chosen it as a city to do it because you're asking for trouble.
Just for the trouble.
Yeah, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Okay, but then in more recently, like in the last 2 or 3 months, I think it was in a gay club in Jerusalem, was it, or wherever it was?
A youth centre.
There was a shooting.
That's correct.
And that was sort of leads into a discussion with Michael, I suppose, because Michael has taken some pretty high-profile stances as a result of that. So, Michael, firstly, give us a background to that. What's the background to this?
Tragically, two people were shot in this youth centre in Tel Aviv.
Was it a gay youth centre?
I believe it's a gay centre that has youth meetings. And two people, a masked gunman came in and you know, sprayed bullets all over the place in this centre, killing two people, a 19-year-old girl and a 26-year-old guy who's got family here in Melbourne, and then 15 people were injured. And it was horrible, really, really horrible. And there was no one's actually found out who or why that happened, who did that or why it happened, so it's not known if it was a gay hate crime or religious hate crime.
So they've never found the person?
No. Or some act of terrorism or just, you know, a lover's tiff, as some people have speculated, which is hard to believe, but,
so,
you know, things...
Could be any of those things.
Some maniacal person. But the centre is actually apparently below street level and off the public view. You wouldn't actually stumble across it by chance and think, oh, here's a good place to go and have a shooting spree without knowing about it. So you'd need to have known where it was.
So it was pre-planned.
So what happened? I think, if I remember rightly, the Israeli Prime Minister came out, if I remember rightly, and against that action, if I remember correctly, but it didn't happen here or something.
Both the President and the Prime Minister of Israel, I believe, in different time frames, went and visited or spoke out against that type of, you know, any type of horrific shooting, and saying we need to, you know, can't have intolerance of anybody, effectively, and we must be, you know, respectful of all people, irrespective of what their, whether it's sexuality or whatever. I mean, that's... There's a whole another political debate as to, you know, tolerance and respect coming from the Israeli government, but let's not go into that. We're talking about gay and lesbian people here, and they're saying you must respect all people irrespective of their sexuality. And so the Israeli government spoke out against that level of intolerance, if it was a hate crime. You know, we don't know. We just, it's likely, but we don't know.
But it didn't happen. You took a fairly high-profile stance on this whole issue. Why? Why were you so concerned about it, and what sort of reaction did you get here in Australia?
Well, what happened was the local Jewish newspaper, the Australian Jewish News, did had 6 or 7 pages of coverage, different types of coverage, editorial, local opinion, cartoons, front page, you know, two girls wrapped in a rainbow flag, all sorts of things. And that was fantastic coverage. It was immediate. It was, you know, brought the issue right home and said, this is what happened. And then the next week there was a story saying, you know, there's a great aunt of the guy who was killed, lives in Melbourne, etc., etc. There's a website that took offence to that. It was a blog that monitors the Australian Jewish News and, you know, likes to comment from an Orthodox perspective and says, you know, it's now the gay Jewish newspaper because, you know, they clearly have a gay agenda and wrote the most disgusting language I've ever heard about, you know, gay people and talks about the snake pits of depravity and, you know, disgusting things about Tel Aviv. And so and then there was nothing from the Jewish community in Melbourne speaking out against that. You know, it's unacceptable that a Melbourne person can write something so vitriolic about gay people in Tel Aviv in Israel and get away with it.
Do you think the Jewish community in Melbourne, though, would be a little bit apprehensive about speaking out and getting the backlash?
Don't see why not.
Jewish community, whilst it thinks it has one voice, doesn't have one voice. It's many voices. It's lots of people with lots of opinions. And, you know, there's a lot of people that support the progressives in Melbourne. Fantastic support for the gay community. Fantastic support for gay Jews. Very accepting and welcoming. You know, they have same-sex Jewish commitment ceremonies and endorse, you know, people in the congregations and communities who are same-sex and attracted and in relationships.
So why do you think there was silence?
Because the leadership, the official voice of the Jewish community, perhaps more so at that moment in time, was scared to speak out because they didn't want to disenfranchise the Orthodox leaders within the Jewish community. They have fairly weighty influence.
So where is it now? Because as I was saying to you off air a few minutes ago, you were fairly high profile over several weeks in various news groups and whatever, and Facebook and whatever, but it seems to have gone quiet in the last 2 or 3 weeks, or at least that's how it appears.
Look, I was, you know, trying to make a noise about this, about letters that got published in the paper that speak about gay people in really disgusting terms and things like that, and I made a big noise, and I got, you know, national exposure through ABC Radio and other different outlets. The gay media in Melbourne were fantastic and covered everything. Recently there has been actually some developments. For example, as of the 5th of October, a media release was issued by the Jewish Community Council of Victoria that for a Mental Health Week that does talk about vilifying Jews on sexual orientation. Now, this is the first document. Of course, I did actually provide them with some material prior to that, but, you know, they chose to include it. And it's the first time I've actually seen a statement issued in public from the Jewish Community Council of Victoria actually mentioning anything positive or supportive towards gay people. So there has actually been some degree of support and change within the Jewish community. And
Does that make you feel that you want to go on even more now? You just want to take full steam ahead?
Yeah, while people are still being discriminated against and people's lives are at risk due to depression and possible self-harm like suicide, then, yes, there is no stopping until everybody is given a fair go, you know?
You will have copped a lot of flack over this as well. I mean, you've got the support, obviously, from various people, but how have you stood up?
Emotionally, it's really challenging for me. It's really, really hard to do this sort of stuff. I get great support from my partner, and I get great support from, you know, my friends and my family have been amazingly supportive. There are people who don't understand why I'm doing things like this, but there are some fantastic people in the Jewish community and in the GLBT community who are very, very supportive, and it's the energy that those people give me that, you know, the drive to go on.
So if your family, you mentioned you got support, so your family's obviously had to live with a bit of flack as well, presumably.
I don't know that they necessarily have. I think that a lot of the people in their social circles are fairly enlightened and understand the issues. In fact, most of my parents' friends have gay or lesbian children.
Mm. Well, very interesting, Michael. So where is it now? So it's proceeding. The bottom line is that you've achieved certain goals, and it looks like you've won a little bit.
A small progress has been made, which is amazing considering the last 10 years has been none.
And and finally, wrapping up, just recapping, if somebody wants to find out more about Aleph Melbourne, it's aleph.org.au.
Yeah, contact at aleph.org.au or yep. facebook.com/ALEPH.
That's On Driven for another week. Thanks to Michael and Colin are coming up soon. Sorry,
Simon and Paul.
I don't know why I said that. And thanks to Michael and Colin for coming on the show tonight. Coming up next is the team from Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on Driven tonight. We'll be back again at the same time next week, 7 p.m. with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks to Nick and Marcus on reception for their help, and from Alan and myself, good night.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.